हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
पेज 7 Question 10.6 from Bhagavatam 10.1.11. Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, has no material body. Yet he appears as a human being. For how many years did he live with the descendants of Rishi? A great sage who knows everything about Krishna. Please describe in detail all the activities of which I have inquired and also those of which I have not. For I have full faith and am very eager to hear of them. But so... he may, through his own intelligence and that, be able to understand some points. But then points that he may not know, then he's hoping that the teacher then will teach, even though he doesn't know it's important, but it will be taught anyway. Right? And because he has full faith, then he's qualified to hear.
So it's very personal.
Yes.
I don't even know what I want.
Yeah. Like that. The teacher knows, so he has full faith that the teacher knows, and he has full faith in Krishna. Therefore, then whatever the teacher thinks should be taught, then will be taught. Okay. Krishna's pastimes with the Vrishnis are especially detailed from the 41st chapter of this canto until the end of the 11th canto. Krishna was nearly 11 when he entered Mathura, and he was 125 when he wound up his earthly pastimes. These numbers are confirmed in Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's Sardartha Darshani. Question 10.7 from 10.1.11. How many wives did he marry and for how many years did he live in Dwarka? The first part of this query is answered in chapters 52 through 59 of this canto. Krishna's 16,108 wives are Rukmini, Vidarbhi, Jambavati, Satyabhama, Kalindi, Jamuna, Mitravinda, Satya, Nagnajiti. Oh, is that how you get that? Because sometimes you hear Satya and sometimes Nagnajiti. Okay. Bhadra, Lakshmana, and the 16,100 princesses headed by Rohini Devi, who were held captive by the Bhamasura, Narakasura. Because sometimes you see it mentions these other queens in Rohini. So it mentions Rohini, it means the other 16,100. Like that. Krishna's establishment of Dwarka is described in the 50th chapter of this canto. As mentioned above, he lived in Dwarka for 96 years and 8 months. Question 10.8 from 10.1.12. A great sage who know everything about Krishna, please describe in detail all the activities of which I have inquired and also those which I have not. Seems that it's an important question. Okay. Sukadeva Goswami addresses this request throughout the rest of the canto. The rhetorical questions uttered in verses 4, 37, 44, and 58 do not come under this study. Adhyaya Prakashika, chapter summary by Srila Prabhupada. This chapter describes how Kamsa, frightened by hearing an omen about his being killed by the 8th son of Devaki, killed Devaki's sons one after another. Krishna was the only worshipable deity for the Pandavas. When Maharaj Pariksit was in the womb of his mother, Uttara, Krishna saved him from the attack of the Brahmastra. Now Maharaj Pariksit asks Sukadeva Goswami how his lordship Baladev, the son of Rohini, could have appeared in the womb of Devaki. Why did Krishna transfer himself to Mathura, from Mathura to Vrindavan? King Pariket asked, and how did he live there with his family members? What did Krishna do in Mathura and Vrindavan, and why did he kill his maternal uncle Kamsa? How many years did Krishna reside in Dwarka, and how many queens did he have? Maharaj Pariket asked Sukadev Goswami all these questions. He asked Sukadev Goswami. He also requested Sukadev Goswami to describe other activities of Krishna about which he could not inquire. When Sukadev Goswami began to speak about Krishna consciousness, Maharaj Pariket forgot the fatigue brought about by his fasting. Enthusiastic to describe Krishna, Sukadev Goswami said, like the waters of the Ganges, descriptions of the activities of Krishna can purify the entire universe. The speaker, the inquirer, and the audience all become purified. Right, so we see here is that it's the standard. Also, you have the speaker, the inquirer, and the audience. So it's not that everybody has to ask questions. It's those who have an understanding of the topic matter that could ask relevant questions, they ask the questions. Does that make sense? So when you have a big assembly on a specific topic, then they would make it, streamlined by then just having, you know, who's inquiring. Like here, this assembly, but it's just about Sukadev Goswami and Pariket Maharaj, or then Suta Goswami and Shaunaka Rishi. So this kind of principle is there. Then you have a general assembly where everybody talks and all that, and the vichar from all the different angles. That's another one. But they're talking about in here and this kind of thing. Then the point is who's asking, who's speaking gets benefit. Who asks questions gets benefit. And who only hears, neither is speaking or asking questions. So everybody gets benefit. That's the whole point. Once, when the entire world was overburdened by the increasing military power of demons in the form of kings, Mother Earth assumed the shape of a cow and approached Lord Brahma for relief. Vowel shift influence. Sympathetic to Mother Earth's lamentations, Brahma, accompanied by Lord Shiva and other demigods, took the cow-shaped Mother Earth to the shore of the Milk Ocean, where he offered prayers to please Lord Vishnu, who lay there on an island in transcendental ecstasy. Brahma thereafter understood the advice of Lord Mahavishnu, who informed him that he would appear on the surface of the earth to mitigate the burden created by the demons. The demigods, along with their wives, should appear there as associates of Lord Krishna in the family of Yadu to increase the sons and grandsons in that dynasty. By the will of Lord Krishna, Anantadev would appear first, as Balaram, and Krishna's potency, Yogamaya, would also appear. Brahma informed Mother Earth about all this and then returned to his own abode, right? Because who lives in Dwarka, right? Krishna, Balaram, and Subhadra, right? So they're naturally toward these pastimes to it. Yeah. After marrying Devaki, Vasudeva was returning home with her on a chariot driven by Kamsa, her brother, when an ominous voice addressed Kamsa, warning him that Devaki's eighth son would kill him. Upon hearing this omen, Kamsa was immediately ready to kill Devaki, but Vasudeva diplomatically began to instruct him. Vasudeva stressed that it would be no good for Kamsa to kill his younger sister, especially at the time of her marriage. Anyone who possesses a material body must die, Vasudeva advised him. Every living entity lives in a body for some time and transmigrates to another body, but one is unfortunately misled into accepting the body as the soul. If a person under this mistaken concept wants to kill another body, he is condemned as hellish. Because Kamsa was not satisfied by Vasudeva's instructions, Vasudeva devised a plan. He offered to bring Kamsa all of Devaki's children so that Kamsa could kill them. Why then should Kamsa kill Devaki now? Right? Because his idea was if he saves Devaki, then he can start worrying about the children. But if he kills Devaki, then there's no Devaki or children. Right? So, yes. Practical. Kamsa was satisfied by this proposal. In due course of time, when Devaki gave birth to a child, Vasudeva brought the newborn baby to Kamsa, who upon seeing Vasudeva's magnanimity was struck with wonder. When Vasudeva gave Kamsa the child, Kamsa, showing some intelligence, said that since he was to be killed by the eighth child, why should he kill the first? Although Vasudeva did not trust him, Kamsa requested Vasudeva to take the child back. Later, however, after Narada approached Kamsa and disclosed to him that the demigods were appearing in the Yadu and Vrishni dynasty and conspiring to kill him, Kamsa decided to kill all the children born in these families. And he also decided that any child born from the womb of Devaki must be killed, right? Because they might be demigods. So he knows it's the eighth child that's going to kill him, but still you have all these others who are conspiring. So, right, like that. So in other words, this concept of boss baby is not a new thing. Right, you know, yes. Thus he arrested and imprisoned both Devaki and Vasudeva and killed six of their sons, one after another. Narada also informed Kamsa, right, because before this they were just free living on their own. And he brought the child anyway. So that means he wasn't in prison and he still dealt them this way. That's why Kamsa was actually amazed. But now, after this, now they're in prison, and so then whenever a child is born, then the guards will inform Kamsa, he'll come like that. Narada also informed Kamsa that in his previous birth, Kamsa was Kalanemi, a demon killed by Vishnu. Consequently, Kamsa became a great enemy to all the descendants of the Yadu Vamsha, the Yadu dynasty. He even arrested and imprisoned his own father, Ugrasena, for Kamsa wanted to enjoy the kingdom alone. I think Kalanemi, I'm not sure, but I think in Mahabharata, when they were flying with Ghatotkacha, the Pandavas, and that, I'm not sure they didn't also take Krishna along and everybody. They all went up to Gandamanda, the mountain. While they were flying there, in the distance they saw this huge white mountain. And they inquired, what's that mountain? You know, because, you know, mountains are generally just your rocks and things like that. Might be some snow on the top, but this whole thing is white. And so then he said that that's the bones that I remember is Kalanemi. That's the bones of Kalanemi. So when they got close, they could see. Yeah, so he was a, when we say big demon, we literally mean big demon.
Another point that because of Narada, apparently, Vasudeva and Devaki suffered so much.
Not that I have a problem.
Just a doubt.
But then, do the pastimes not start to be arranged? Because otherwise, unless something's going on, why would Krishna come? So something's going on.
And usually we take this and apply in our own lives, not that we are in Krishna going to appear or something. But when somebody plays such a role in our life,
I see. From that angle, I see. But does Narad Muni know past, present, future? Right? So he knows Krishna's coming. So he knows all that will happen. Does he also know that then at some point then Devaki will get all her sons back? So then what's the problem?
Does she know?
No. Oh, I get it. Okay. So in other words, Krishna has a plan, it's all going to work out, but in the meantime you don't know the plan, so then you're... But the point is we put faith in the material energy. If everything goes perfectly, then we'll think it's not such a bad place. You know, so that's why then this aspect is there. It's like Indra when he came, ended up as a pig. When Narada Muni came to take him back, he just thought, what's the problem? You know, I'm here, I got my place, I got my family, it's all happening.
I was also more interested in dealing with those who represent Krishna's agents.
Yes, but the point is, are they representing Narada Muni?
Who knows?
Oh, then if they are, then you should see very nicely and be very respectful.
Can we say it's the litmus test of our own advancement?
Yeah, you could look at it that way. That could work. Because this means anything like this reminds us the material world's not nice, so therefore we're inspired to be Krishna conscious. Okay, Shloka Anusharana. Summary of verses. Verses 1 to 16. Maharaj Parikshit inquires about the pastimes of Sri Krishna. 17 to 25. On the plea of Mother Bhumi, the Devatas pray to Lord Vishnu. 26 to 69. Vasudev negotiates with Kamsa to spare Devaki's life. Verses 1 to 16. Maharaj Parikshit inquires about the pastimes of Sri Krishna. King Parikshit said, "My dear Lord, you have elaborately described the dynasties of both the moon god and the sun god. with the exalted and wonderful character of their kings. Srila Vishnu Chakrabarti Thakur elaborates. In order to increase the speaker's enthusiasm to speak about the most crucial topics, Parikshit praises the previous descriptions in Bhagavatam. Because Chandra is the grandson of Brahma, because Chandra is his Amsa, because he is the deity of the mind, and because Krishna appeared in that dynasty, Chandra is mentioned before Surya, though the usual order would place Surya first. Though the wonderful activities of Swayambhuva and his dynasty were related in the fourth canto, they did not culminate in sweetness. With Krishna of the moon dynasty and Rama of the sun dynasty, sweetness was finally attained. Thus, discussions of these dynasties became prominent. And so he's talking about them because up to this point, then Brahma, the creation, his interaction with Narada, and then the Manus coming down, so the directly the dynasties of Brahma, because basically everybody's Brahma's dynasty, right? So all these things, but they didn't end in sweetness. So only when Ramachandra comes in the ninth canto, and now at the end, then Krishna, then you can say that sweetness has been attained. But of those two, because so much more is prominent in the moon dynasty, you know, with Krishna and the connection laid there, therefore it's mentioned first, even though normally you would mention the sun, then the moon. Right? So if you're just talking about the social order, but we're talking about the aspect of sweetness, so it becomes more sweet than with the dynasty of the sun. Then it's going to be most sweet with the dynasty of the moon, right? Because it comes up to here. So the primary creation, the secondary creation, which is Brahma's creation, then his sons, the Prajapatis, then the Manus, like this. So all this is going to be connected to Brahma. But it just attains that sweetness when you come to the sun and moon dynasties and when you come to Ramachandra and to Krishna. So,
Maharaj, Krishna will always be in the Chandra dynasty and Rama in the sun. It is always peaceful.
Yeah, generally. Shouldn't be.
No, because we saw that...
Yeah, because moon is mind, so that means the taste. So then you see Krishna is more about that variety of tastes and rasa and everything like that. Well, the sun is more that's fixed, it's, you know, the exact, the religion and everything like that. So Ramachandra then in Maryada, then it has that aspect. So that matches nicely. Maharaj Parikshit continued. O best of the Munis, you have also described the descendants of Yadu, who are very pious and strictly adherent to religious principles. Dharma Shilasya, footnote 1. In his additional notes for this chapter, Srila Prabhupada adds, Srila Sanatana Goswami's Vaishnava Toshani has explained the word Dharma Shilasya. The exact meaning of Dharma Shila is an unadulterated devotee. Real Dharma consists of full surrender to Krishna, right? So that's what I mean, is that full surrender, as we are discussing, that Bhagavad Dharma means it's all about serving Krishna. So that you could see is the real Dharma, or unadulterated devotion. While if it's about the Dharma itself, then that means then there's a mix. Sarva Dharmam Parityajya Mam Ekam Sharanam Braja, Bhagavad Gita 18:66. One who has fully surrendered to Krishna is actually religious. One such religious person is Maharaj Parikshit. Anyone who accepts the principle of surrender to the lotus feet of the Lord, giving up all other systems of religion, is actually Dharmashila, perfectly religious. Right? That's the principle. So that's what defines, not the secondary religions. It means we use secondary religions as a symptom of how the person is serious and that, but it's actually that devotion to that primary, that's the real religion. So that's perfectly religious. Right? Now, if you will kindly describe the wonderful, glorious activities of Vishnu or Krishna, who appeared in that Yadu dynasty with Baladeva, his planetary expansion. The Super Soul, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna, the cause of the cosmic manifestation, appeared in the dynasty of Yadu. Please tell me elaborately about his glorious activities and character from the beginning to the end of his life. Srila Prabhupada comments. In this word, the words Krita Vanyani indicate that all the different activities Krishna performed while present on the earth are beneficial to human society. Right? So, as we mean before, if it's about Bhagavad Dharma, then it's about Krishna. So that means the results. I'm performing Dharma. Performance of Dharma gives artha. So what artha is that? So if I'm practicing just the standard religious processes, the result or the artha will be in that religious form. It will be some form of development in my material situation. Greater purity, greater facility, greater realization or knowledge, greater liberation. Does that make sense? Sense graphic. They'll all culminate in that. But how is that beneficial for everybody? It's just beneficial for ourselves. We may be able to use it in charity and this and that, benefit some people, but that's also temporary. So we haven't actually benefited the soul. We benefited the conditioned position that the soul is in. But when it's about Krishna, because whatever he does is beneficial, then when we do activities that are just connected to him, that actually becomes really beneficial. So that's how you tell the difference. The result of the activities are for who? Right? So renunciation means I'm performing the secondary activity, getting the results of the secondary activity, I give it to Krishna. Sannyas means it's about the primary activity, I'm engaging the secondary to manifest that, and the results are already Krishna's before I get them. Right? You understand the difference? That's why this is brought out so much, because otherwise, why would we make the shift? Because, oh no, but we're doing the things. It's all about Krishna. You know, just like we heard before. Yeah, well, it's preaching. Right? So we will say, and yes, ultimately it may be, but what about all this in between the position I'm in right now and that ultimately? Does it also carry that same unalloyed nature? Yes.
Can we say the risk is that if something goes wrong in between those points, then it won't actually go to the
yes,
right.
It won't get there. It means if you follow nicely, then you should get there. But that's why it's mentioned that direct aspect is just for Krishna. Then, even if it's not successful, just like what if I don't get a result from my religious process? Do I have something to offer to Krishna? No. But if it's all for Krishna, then the process, even whatever is done, whatever is accomplished, or not, it's all connected to Krishna. So that's why it's the superior system, because you're getting benefit all the way through. The other one, only when you get to the end is there benefit. So if religionists, philosophers, and people in general simply hear the activities of Krishna, they will be liberated. We have described several times the two kinds of Krishna Katha, represented by Bhagavad Gita, spoken personally by Krishna about himself, and Srimad Bhagavatam, spoken by Sukadeva Goswami about the glories of Krishna. Anyone who becomes even slightly interested in Krishna Katha is liberated. Kirtanad eva Krishnasya mukta sangaf param brajet. Srimad Bhagavatam 12.3.51. Simply by chanting or repeating Krishna Katha, one is liberated from the contamination of Kali Yuga. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu therefore advised, Jare Deka Tare Kaha Krishna Upadesh. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 7.1.28. This is the mission of Krishna consciousness, to hear about Krishna and thus be liberated from material bondage. Maharaj Parikit continued. Glorification of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is performed in the Parampara system. That is, it is conveyed from spiritual master to disciple. Such glorification is relished by those who are no longer interested in the false temporary glorification of this cosmic manifestation, right? Because that's what we mentioned before. That which is the temporary. Or the illusion, the dream. Those means those who are enamored by the dream, they will then go on with that. Those who are then interested in reality, who means Krishna, so they'll see all those same things, but in connection with Krishna. Okay, footnote 2. In his additional notes for this chapter, Srila Prabhupada adds, the word nivritti tarshahi, refers to one who no longer has any material desires. Sarvapari vinir muktam. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 19.170. One may have many material desires because of contamination in this world, material world. But when one is completely free from all material desires, he is called Nivritta Trishna, which indicates he no longer has any thirst for material enjoyment. Because Trishna means the, how you say, the taste for material enjoyment.
Mm. Right? Quick question. Why is Sarvapati Vinaya Muktam referred to Chaitanya Charitamrita, not Rupa?
That's where it's quoted.
No, but it's
the proper quote maybe comes from CC.
Yeah. Because Rupa was on this before CC. I'm just curious. That's not that it makes a big difference, but.
Oh, sometimes. No. I think it's being drawn from Prabhupada's purport.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah, but Rupa Goswami writes.
Yes.
Rupa Goswami writes after he sat with Lord Chaitanya.
Yes.
And so then if Lord Chaitanya says it,
okay,
we shouldn't have a problem.
Oh, no problem.
Or, so that's going before.
Yeah.
Or if we take it that something being said, that's, about, you know, Krishna says it, that's nice. Then the devotee says it, becomes sweeter, and then
yes,
it keeps going down. So then if Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is quoting Rupa Goswami, then it will be more sweet.
Also,
so therefore, if Lord Chaitanya says it, Rupa Goswami says it, or Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami says it,
we're
good on all accounts. Okay?
At the platform of Ruchi, is one completely free of all material desires?
Not completely free, but that means that they start going, blowing away like dry leaves in a storm.
Mm-hmm.
But that's where you'll see it's dynamic, because you have a taste that you lose the taste of the material.
Mm-hmm.
While at Nishtha, you may still have that taste, but because you're fixed in devotional service, you're not acting on it. But with Ruchi, you actually give it up because it moves forward.
I just raised Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami is quoting this verse, and he's I think it's the words of, I'm not sure, but Krishnadas Kaviraj is quoting Rupa Goswami in this.
This, okay. Okay.
There's additional notes for this chapter.
Yeah, it means that he wrote his purports and then he also put additional notes.
Oh. Sorry, further clarification. This chapter is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu instructing Rupa Goswami.
This chapter?
Yeah, uh-huh. Of 19.170. Yeah. Or chapter 19 of Madhya is...
Oh, so this is quoting from additional notes to the chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Or in Krishna book.
No, he was asking why is the Sarvapati verse here, because that particular verse comes from the chapter in Chaitanya Charitamrita where Lord Chaitanya is instructing Rupa Goswami, and Lord Chaitanya is reciting this verse.
So then you're getting all three in this one verse.
That
Krishnas Kaviraj Goswami is quoting Lord Chaitanya's instruction to Rupa Goswami.
Yes.
So therefore it's Rupa Goswami's. Yes. So you get them all. And the additional notes that I know of are here in 10th Canto, no?
Yeah.
Are they included in the 10th Canto?
Yeah, that I know of. Yeah. They're additional notes. So, because you have that, you write the point, what you're doing, and that flows in that and gives that explanation, but there may be further points you want to bring out, so then they're put into footnotes or other things. So that's what vritis are. So, means in your modern... your contemporary modern writing style, they don't like to do this because it means it gets complicated. It means you have to have brains, right? So the intellectuals don't appreciate that.
You have to be sincere.
Yeah, I mean, they don't like all this intellectualizing on intellectual stuff. So the point is it's exact to find out what things are and to define them. The other way, they just like it to flow nicely, it sounds nice, it goes nice, and if it can, you know, make sense, then that's even better. But here is that you'll do just like Sanatana Goswami writes the book, then he'll write his commentary on it. So now, the explanation has a unfolding. Now, if in that there will be some other point that we want to bring out, but to give detail on, but we don't want it to affect the flow, then it will put it into additional notes. Like that. Does that make sense? So it's a natural writing. It's a traditional writing process. People don't like it. Like this thing with we having footnotes like this. Nowadays, I think they don't even use footnotes. People that footnotes like, you know, if it's a footnote where it just gives the you know, the reference, then that's fine. But big like this, people don't like them, unless you're German, then they're okay. But other than Germany, I think no one uses them anymore. Like that, you know, so
it's
that,
a specific Rasa in Germany. In itself,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you know, it's just like when you have that, there's one line up there in the full page.
Yeah,
there's a taste.
Glorious.
Yes.
Sorry, one more note. This verse is originally from Narada Pancharatra.
It's from Narada Pancharatra, given by Lord Chaitanya to Rupa Goswami, and now quoting all that by Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, and that is coming as an additional note of Srila Prabhupada in 10th Canto. Right? So then you're getting all the... It just keeps getting better and better.
So.
Yes,
we're not bringing that one. Like that. Otherwise, I say we have the aspect of when you have jaundice, sugar tastes bitter. So we'll stop at Srila Prabhupada. Then we can guarantee sweetness. Does that make sense? So that's why you see some things we include in the main text and some points we put into notes also. Because if you just read the main text without the footnotes, it would make sense. But to give further understandings of that, which we may or may not have, those are in the footnotes. So that, because if you work that into the main, you would lose the flow.
Mm-hmm. Basically, it shows how important this canto thing is, because we never had it for other things.
I think that in all the other 9 cantos, there was 1 or 2. I forget where it was, 6th canto or something, Prabhupada had a note. Mm-hmm. But it was, I think, the only other one. But in here, so far, we've had 2. Mm-hmm. You know, so.
He also had this for Gita. Remember, you wrote something.
Some additional notes. Oh, okay.
Not additional. What was
study
it?
Guide.
Oh, that was the analysis.
Yeah, the analysis.
Yeah, that's a different thing. That's
but it also something additional that he did.
Yes, 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 yeah. Further, like that. In other words, it's like the like we have the Sandarbhas for the Bhagavatam, and we have Prabhupada's analysis of Gita for. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Swamin kritartosmi varam na yajache. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya 22:42. Hari Bhakti Shudodaya. Materialist persons want some material profit from executing devotional service. But this is not the purpose of service, right? Means you do the activity and it will produce a material result. So we may be interested in that result. Let's say like we discussed before, brahmacharya. Then from the brahmacharya means then what's the result you gain from it? Less difficulty, less material involvement. So there's less you know, harassment. So one may have an attachment for that, though from that position you're doing it for Krishna. Does that make sense? I thought we'd throw in the gyan side rather than the regular bucket of halava side. Right?
So feeling generous.
Yes, okay. Does that make sense? But as time goes, one's not worried about that. Though it may be one's natural position will remain like that. Like Narada Muni is transcendental, but he still remains as a brahmachari. Okay. So it's no... because there's no need. Means as the Gandharva, then he ends up with snowman girls. But other than that, then... Okay. The perfection of devotional service lies in complete surrender unto the lotus feet of Krishna, with no material desires. One who surrenders in this way is already liberated, right? So your perfection means you're already getting benefit from mixed devotional service, that we're practicing religion and getting the benefits from that. We're offering, connecting them to Krishna. But the actual one is where we have no material desire. So use of those religious principles to serve Krishna is only for Krishna's pleasure. Jivan Mukta Sa Uchate. One who is always busy serving Krishna in whatever condition he may live is understood to be liberated even in this life. Right? Because one is bound because of material desire. If there's a material desire, one is liberated. Such a person who is a pure devotee does not need to change his body. Indeed, he does not possess a material body, for his body has already been spiritualized. Right? So he doesn't need a spiritual body to be engaged in spiritual activities. Even with the body he's in, he's already engaged full-time in spiritual activities. And then we see with personalities like the Pandavas and that, those self-same bodies, that's the bodies that they transfer to other realms. Like that. So the... Yeah. An iron rod kept constantly within a fire ultimately becomes fire, and whatever it touches will burn. Similarly, the pure devotee is in the fire of spiritual existence, and therefore his body is chinmaya. That is, it is spiritual, not material, because the pure devotee has no desire, but the transcendental desire to serve the Lord. That we have to understand. That's spiritual. Not the condition of, oh, it doesn't have the temporary this and that, oh, but the body gets all... That's not what we're talking about. It's about what's the primary aspect of it. What facility are you gaining from that religious process? If you're gaining the eternal, then it's spiritual. If you're gaining the material, yes, then it's material, then it's temporary. You understand? We have to be able to switch from viewing things from the secondary perspective to viewing from the primary, and at the same time being able to see the secondary. But what you're actually seeing is the primary. Like I mentioned before, Prabhupada said the pure devotees don't actually see the material world, they see Krishna. It's not that they can't tell the variety of Krishna and how to work with it, but they only see its connection to Krishna. That's why they're on the spiritual platform. But that's the liberated platform. Is that apurva? Would that be apurva?
But it's not full. And it's not complete devotional worship if it's material.
Apurva. So which one's apurva?
Dakarma mimamsa.
Yes, that's definitely not transcendental. Yes.
Is it the Icha Shakti we're working with here when we're talking about the actual primary?
Yes, you could say. Because if you're dealing on the other two, then you're seeing it paramatma, because if this is the duties to perform, or this is the knowledge. So the aspects of karma and jnana you would be engaging as a religious processes in the Lord's service. But yes, it would be more on that type. Because when it gets to the point of what's Krishna's desire. Otherwise we're talking about, you know, why do we have to eat this Indian food? The point is, why is there Indian food? Because that's what Krishna eats, and just they still happen to cook it here. You know? Means all the things that are mentioned in Chaitanya Charitamrita, what Lord Chaitanya ate, which means what they eat in the spiritual world, there are people who nowadays cook that as just normal day-to-day food. You know, so it's left over. So then we'll call it Bengali, but actually it's what Lord Chaitanya eats.
Because we don't understand.
Yeah, but if we don't like it, then we're trying to, you know, interpolate and add in different things. And well, how do we know that? It doesn't say that Lord, you know, Mother, I mean, what is it? Satchimata didn't cook pizza. It doesn't say she didn't, you know. That's but right. It also didn't say that she didn't have three heads, you know. You know, or moonlighted, you know, at night to make, you know, the extra cash, you know, to buy the pizza, you know, oven and all that, you know, driving taxis. You know, it doesn't say that. So that's the point. Why do we have to put things there? Why do we have to give an indirect interpretation of things that are just directly presented and accepted?
When Prabhupada said specifically we don't do that.
Yeah, that's another thing. That's, you know,
many of them concede that point, that even if you do agree that that's what they ate, where does it say that we have to eat the same thing? For example, Lord Chaitanya is described as eating as much as, you know, 10 or 100 people. We don't have to follow that.
No, but the point is that doesn't mean that it changes what you eat. So you have to be able to discriminate. You have to be able to discriminate on what the example means. Mm-hmm. So Lord Chaitanya followed this culture. Maybe he was 7 foot tall, so he would eat for what 5 of us would eat. But The point is we're not 7 foot tall, so you would eat in proportion to that if you want to get scientific on that position. So if you're 5 foot two, then you eat accordingly. Mm-hmm. You know, you take the, what do you call the BMI and work it out. You know?
Quarter bucket of hollow.
Yes. You know, so God don't do that. So to use that to throw out the whole thing, but then, you know, if we want to throw that out, but then Lord Chaitanya ate, and so then if we're throwing out the volume he's eating, we're throwing out what he's eating, why don't we just throw out eating? So why don't they just live off of air like orchids or something? You know what I'm saying? It's not consistent. So that's what we're meaning by philosophies, these lower four philosophies, where they only take those portions of verses that support their view. They can't actually comment dealing with other verses. So that's why Jaimini is considered superior to these other four, because he'll comment on all verses. Mm-hmm. But he'll only use the purva, the beginning stage of application, means in the way of karma. While then Uttara Mimamsa will take it to jnana, to liberation. So it's the superior. Mm-hmm. You know, so that can deal with that. Then of that, then you have the Vaishnava Vedanta. Mm-hmm. So then one has to know, so did Prabhupada say we should all eat for five people, each person? No, but he said this is what Lord Chaitanya eats, so this is what we're cooking. And if they said, well, it doesn't say that, where does it say Prabhupada said that? What did Prabhupada cook at 26 Second Avenue? What did he teach them to cook?
Mm-hmm. He actually does say, CC, that every cook in this country should learn these preparations.
Yeah.
He doesn't say anything about pizza.
Yeah.
No, so it's like, if you're sincere, what's the problem?
Yeah, you know, you learn that on the side. You learn to ride a bicycle, and then if you can do some tricks, then fine. But it's not. At least you can ride a bicycle. Right? You know. But that is just tricks. And then even you want to get down to pizza, then the point is does it have pineapple or not?
Banana.
So is that included?
Yeah. I saw banana.
Yeah, banana curry. Not banana. Banana curry. Right? You make a curry out of banana, put that on the pizza.
Right?
Yes, like that. And that all happened up in your end of the universe.
Why do you think I'm here?
I mean, like Anantadev left all the other snakes and went off, you know, to get away from the sanity. Okay. So that's the point is that you have to take, so that's how we know how to interpret, is by what the acharyas give us. So since Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami goes into great detail to explain what's cooked, Prabhupada then supports that. Prabhupada himself showed how to cook those things and discussed like that. Bhaktivinoda Thakura then mentions what Krishna is eating. So it appears that Krishna is eating, that there's much more of a connection between the Brajvasi cooking and the Bengali cooking. North Indian is another thing, but there Krishna is eating Shukta Shakati Bhaji. It's not that Lord Chaitanya was eating. He's eating that also. Mm-hmm. It just seems to be the volume of rice is greater on this side than on that side. Because this side there were no chapatis, but on that side there were chapatis. But the whole principle, because if you see it, how the Brajvasis cook themselves, cook, and how the Bengali, that's very similar. Mm-hmm. So just if we go back, it must have been much more like that. So that's what you have to take, is that the Bhagavatam says, so it's not that, you know, we do like, you know, Prahlad Maharaj has to go and get himself, you know, stomped on underneath elephants. But you take, what do the acharyas comment on that? That's the real thing. So then if we throw out the Shastra, which is Krishna's breathing, we throw out the acharyas comments for our own comments, then what position are we actually taking? So the authority is not gurus, you know, and Krishna. The Shastras and these things like that, the acharyas, then it simply becomes our own speculation. Mm-hmm. Because we have to remember, when we're dealing with the founder acharya, then it's more specialized application of the parampara system. That, let's say, if in your standard, how you say it's just coming down?
Mm-hmm. Succession.
Yes, succession. That would be is that you have an advanced personality. Mm-hmm. Then they train their student, and that student becomes advanced, then he becomes the next teacher for the next. And like this, then it comes down to the advanced personalities. Mm-hmm. So that works very good in the other three yugas. Really nice, right? But in Kali Yuga, then you have the element where if it's dependent upon our practice of religion and then coming to great realization because of our understanding of Upanishads and other jazz like that, then we're working at, you know, snowball chances in diesel bums, you know, how you say?
Backyard,
yes. Right? So then we have a problem. So then you have to have a system that parampara goes on. But if you have the founder Acharya, and then the instructions he gives are the instructions that will last for the length of that mission. Right? So as long as ISKCON is there, so Prabhupada said 10,000 years. So that means the whole golden age will be according to the instructions given by the founder, Srila Prabhupada. So now that means I may have great realization or not, but at least I'm giving that. Mm-hmm. Even if I'm a neophyte, I'm giving that, it will have effect. Because it's not based on my conditioning. Therefore, then you can't make up your own philosophy. As soon as you've done, you're not in the parampara anymore, you're out. Mm-hmm. It's just like that, it's that simple. You may say, well, he's the guru, he can say whatever he wants. He can, but his guru-ness is based on how much he connects what he says to the founder. Mm-hmm. Now, there may be very much in these others who are coming down in the line before the founder, they may give different angles, different things like that. It will still be perfect because they are liberated. But when you come within this system, then you're only going to say what the founder says, whether you're liberated or not. Not that liberated ones say something different, just like Vadiraj. I think he's seventh in the line in Ramanuja. He doesn't change anything that's said, but he's a liberated personality. Mm-hmm. You understand? So that's the whole thing. They came to give a push to what's going on. Because there's a mission. There's a founder. So that's why then we can't make our own hermeneutics and then go against what's there. Because Prabhupada, he introduced that kind of cooking, that kind of dress, that kind of methods and practices. Otherwise, if you get rid of the food and the dress, then okay. As long as it's a fight, it's worth fighting for. But what happens if it's accepted? Now what do you fight for? Mm-hmm. Next will be the four regs. Mm-hmm. You know, and then everything else. And then too, it's just like, what's your standard on the street Christian? Does he do anything that's Christian? Technically, nothing. But if you ask him what religion, he'll say Christian. Mm-hmm. So if there's a problem, then there he is, you know, thinking of baby Jesus. Like that, you know. Does that make sense? You know, so that's the whole point. Other than that, nothing. So then you could say, okay, now that, there's 2 billion people like that. Now that's success. But is it success? If you want to follow the Ionians, then you can, then that's the whole point. Ionians, that's the whole thing, where they broke down the principle of authority. Was that it's relative. Well, you're saying it's that, but we say it's this. We perceive it like this, you perceive it like that. There's no absolute truth. So Vedas are saying this, Prabhupada, the Acharyas are saying that, but we are, you know, we're Westerners, we're seeing it like this. So it has just as much validity. That's Ionian philosophy. That's not Vedic, that's not Vaishnava. Mm-hmm.
You know? So the question is, why not just walk off and form your own movement? Why do it to Prabhupada's movement?
Because then that means you have to start from scratch and get out the putty knife and go down to the gutter and start scratching. Mm. You know, scraping and see what you can get. You know, get your string and a fish hook and put it down the gutter and see if you can catch anything. You know,
latches on.
Yeah, yeah. Go out to the local, you know, dump and start sifting through things, see if you find anything like that. So it's much easier just to ride on that. So we see as anybody who tries to go off, they want to take what they can with them. Mm-hmm. You know, but it's just standard, because who wants to start from scratch? Prabhupada's 26th Second Avenue, nothing.
Yeah.
He's standing in line to get into the toilet. You name me anybody who wants to do that. They want to start their own thing. They want to go out. They want to go out with a bang.
Yeah.
They don't want to start from scratch.
Yeah.
one analogy would be riding piggyback on top of someone versus holding them up and making them
Yeah.
Prabhupada serves them rather than
serving Prabhupada. Yeah, because then they're riding on Prabhupada's thing. Yeah. You know, hijack the bandwagon rather than start your own. So that's the thing, is one has to be very, very careful of that. So the things that, so it's just, that's the problem with speech. But that's why it says that if it's connected to the Lord, even though it is words, it still has the potency if the chit potency is there. But without the chit potency, the same words have no meaning. And it's just part of the material energy. Then it's just svotabad. Svotabad is just, you know, speaking. Mm-hmm. The words, you know, the word themselves has, it doesn't have the potency. Right? Nod has potency, because it comes from Krishna. Now, how you want to use nod? Do you want to use it in understanding the Supreme, or do you want to use it in the material? That's then what you
have. Self-help gurus, are they svotabad? How do you...
It depends. I would say that's a whole different kind of approach, because they themselves may be able to see principles behind what they're working at. But the point is that since others can't, that's why they understand and the others don't. How are they going to express it? Through secondary examples. But the point is since they're explaining the secondary examples and they have to put a lot of effort into that, how often do they actually get to the primary? So then, in reality, who will learn from them?
Themselves.
Yeah. Only them, by explaining it more, understand more. And so then like that. But otherwise, no. Mm-hmm. Or you may have those that just see a way to, you know, they're good at talking and make money and Hari Bala.
It's also been said that it is sufficient to follow the four adjective principles and chanting 16 lines. But the other part of the scriptures, it's not required, because, you know, you don't have the adhikara. So that is the reason we're giving the many devotees.
They don't have the adhikarana, but then what do they have the adhikarana for? And they say, if you want to say, I don't have the adhikarana, can someone else have the adhikarana? Because the problem is those who at least make the attempt of the adhikarana, they'll say, oh, you're just being fanatic, you're just being artificial. So then is it just about the adhikarana? Or is it about Mauritian frogs? Right? In other words, only on occasion may admit that the reason that we're following this is because we're not actually qualified to follow something higher. But we're not about to let anybody else be more advanced and follow something higher, because if they do, then what's our prestige? And the whole point is if it's about our material identification, it's got to have prestige. You can't say I'm Western and not have prestige included. That's what the conquistadors are known for, is their pride. Wherever they go in the world, it's their culture is imposed on everywhere else. Right? Means all the British colonies speak English, the French ones speak French, the Spanish ones speak Spanish. But if you check, you know, before the Spanish showed up, it's a good chance in South America they didn't speak Spanish. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole thing. Whatever's their religion, their food, their dress, this is what a civilized person does, and everybody doesn't. It's just like, okay, you go down, the British go down to Africa, right? So the girls are uncivilized because they don't wear anything on the top, right? But now if you go to England, then the more advanced, more up-to-date girls don't wear a whole lot on the top. And in fact, in New York, now the girls don't have to wear anything on the top. It's actually legal. They can walk down the street topless, and it's perfectly bona fide. And so they had to go through hundreds of years to get to that. Africans were already like that, you know, thousands of years ago. So they were on the cutting edge. And we'll say, oh, they're backwards. No, they're right on the cutting edge. Right? You know, and they would wear, the girls would wear a nano skirt, not even a mini skirt or a micro. They would wear a nano skirt. So, you know, so you know what I'm saying? So it's just because we're doing it, now it's okay. Right? Does that make sense? You know, if the dietitians nowadays came out that the Indian diet is the real diet, now everybody's talking about the Indian diet and this and that. Are you eating the Indian diet? Like, oh, you're eating pasta. What's this? What the Indian diet? You know, they call it like that. But it's only because modern has said it. Then now it's something. Why? Because I say it. his hunkiness has spoken. You know, so that's the problem. So we're coming in from the principle, no, the acharyas have said, the authority has said. That's why we're doing. So if you want to say, we're in a fallen position, I can't do that, that's okay. But then don't criticize others who can, or at least want to make an effort. Because Manu mentions, even if you're talking about unqualified people, says if a Shudra tries to mimic and follow the higher cultural elements, the higher religious principles of the higher orders, in the way of, let's say, trying to fast on a fast day or be more clean or things like that, it's glorious. You don't say, oh, but they're not following it all the time. You go, oh, he just tried. So it's considered good. So then why would you have something that anyone does anything that's different from you, you try to pull them down and say it's all the same? It's not the same. Mode of passion and ignorance you can't compare to the mode of goodness. And goodness you can't compare to pure goodness. But the form of goodness and pure goodness are the same. So since we want to get to pure goodness, we're using the process of goodness in the Lord's service, trying to get to that platform. So we're using Dharma to serve Krishna to the point we get to pure Dharma, which is pure goodness. But you can't say that passion and ignorance, and basically speaking is ignorance, because how many are in passion? How many saying we're the body, you know, like this, are in passion? How many? Yeah, very few. How many got money, have this and that? How many? Very few. So they're all in ignorance. And then to try to compare that, and then people who are trying for goodness to say that that's not, oh, we in the West, you can't do that, when it's like, of course, why can't you do it? Because if that's the rule, they should be riding around on horses, they should be wearing feathers, right, like that, and they should be eating bison. Now that's America. You know, but they've imported all this other stuff, so why can't you import from something from somewhere else? Right? You know what I'm saying? It's like Orientals have been living in America since the mid-1800s. Right? Talking Chinese, eating Chinese food, marrying Chinese people, and they're doctors and lawyers and very rich and well-settled people. Right there, right in the heart of America. So why? What's this whole thing? We can't import it. It says, no, you don't have the ability to import it. You don't have the ability to follow. Admit that. But don't say that no one else can do it. And say, oh, I'm trying to make it accessible. Yes, accessible to others who can. Yes, it's a glorious thing. The flood of love of God has come by those who are preaching and doing nicely and all that. But there are some Pashandis who are floating. You want to catch those floating people? Great. But don't say that this other, the whole rest of the movement can't do anything. When basically every last one of those who are making these complaints joined with people who had shaved heads, wearing bed sheets, and ate Indian food. So don't do that. You can't do that. That's dishonest. That's Chala Dharma. That's misapplying the religion. It's cheating. So it doesn't get past the second verse in Bhagavatam. So as long as they only base their whole philosophy on the first verse of Bhagavatam, then fine. That leave the rest of the Bhagavatam. Otherwise, then don't quote it. You're not qualified.
So if you say educated, sophisticated people will be turned off by saying you're yourself or uneducated.
Yes. But the point is which educated, which sophisticated, which kind? But they're turned off by anything. That's the whole point. Those ones are turned off by everything. And the same time is, what do they appreciate is the eclectic, is all the cultural. Yeah. So that's the whole point, is that these same cultural things that we're saying that, no, that will turn them off, with this very same thing that would actually attract them.
Mm-hmm.
Let's say you do like this. Have a nice place, put down nice Persian rugs, nice pillows, silk covers like that, really nicely done, pictures on the wall, tapestries, different things like that, nice lighting, some good quality incense, high, you know, quality, well done prashad, served nicely, you know, get out of the little tables, serve, have them all sit down on the rug, come and serve them, girls dressed nicely, you know, the nice tradition and all that. So, you know, nice music playing in the background, some, you know, they wouldn't like it. You're going to tell me that intellectual, sophisticated person wouldn't like that? You know? So then, who are they talking about?
Yeah.
So they're just talking about those who walk around with chips on their shoulders, and any wrong word that's different than how they want it interpreted, then they blow up and they think they have a right.
Mm-hmm.
So are those actually intellectuals? Are those actually broad-minded people? I don't know. At least in the environment I grew up in, those people can be considered very low class.
Mm-hmm.
They wouldn't be. You wouldn't even like that. Now, if someone wants to preach to them, great. Someone needs to preach to them,
mm-hmm.
but don't adjust the whole world for this very small minority of very narrow-minded, mm-hmm. xenophobic individuals, because
mm-hmm.
they're saying no, we're the liberal, broad-minded, the international. No, that's the most xenophobic, narrow-minded. Because otherwise, everybody likes culture.
Mm-hmm.
That's why people go around the world to see the culture.
Mm-hmm.
You know, can you imagine? You know, you get on the plane, you fly to Japan, and everybody there is just Americans. You know, why do you need to go there? You know, you expect them to, they're not Americans. So they're going to be Japanese eating with chopsticks. Huh? Yeah, wearing the whole thing, the wooden shoes, like that. In fact, if you don't see it on the street, you'll go to a place where everybody is dressed like that. Even you go to America, who wants to see the regular old fat slob in his T-shirt and short? Right? You go to a place and you go to the ranch and they're all dressed up as cowboys and talk cowboy stuff and let's go lasso something, like that. You know, people will pay money to go and spend the weekend. Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that it has its point, is that someone, let's say, who doesn't understand the finities of the culture and is trying to present it to someone who might have some finer sentiments and is being rough about it, yes, you want to avoid that, but that doesn't mean you counteract that by someone who also is rough in their application of not using this.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we're saying, is this hard and soft preaching, that both of these, they're illusion. They're just misapplication of actual preaching.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. Because otherwise, then the hard has advantages and disadvantages. The soft has advantages and disadvantages. So only preaching has both the advantages and no disadvantages.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. So it's a...
Om Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada ki